This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by Cedarside. Cedarside's original 100% organic insect spray kills bed bugs, mosquitoes, fleas, ticks, mites, scorpions, roaches, and more, but is completely safe for your home, pets, and family. Go to cedarside.com, use coupon code Hoffman at checkout for free shipping, or call 800-842-1464 and mention you heard it here. Welcome to the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and today's focus is on inflammation. Inflammation, big concept in medicine these days, because we recognize that inflammation is the final common pathway for the vast majority of diseases. Well, we know inflammation has to do with aches and pains, arthritis, but it goes way beyond that. It is the basis for a wide range of maladies, including cancer, certainly cardiovascular disease, brain disorders. And so we're going to talk to an expert. She's Dr. Amay Shunney, and she is a naturopathic physician. She's an educator. She's a radio personality in her own right. She co-hosts a podcast, Green Tea and Honey, which explores integrative medicine. She practices out on the West Coast, the Left Coast, out in Santa Cruz, California, a place that is beautiful and holistic. And there she blends conventional medical diagnosis and treatment with the use of natural therapeutics. So she's eminently qualified to weigh in on today's subject, which is inflammation. Welcome, Dr. Shunney.
Well, thanks for having me. And, you know, I come from the right coast, so... I feel very comfortable on both coasts.
Well, you know, that's the phenomenon. You know, I grew up in Southern California, in Santa Monica, California. And when I grew up there, it was like all a bunch of, you know, Westerners. And now when I go back to – I migrated to the East Coast, and I've been here for 45 years or more. And now when I go to Santa Monica, California, it's all these East Coast refugees.
Yeah.
It's completely changed.
Refugees, exactly.
I think the people who originally grew up in Santa Monica, California, they can't afford to live there anymore. So they had to move to Burbank or Culver City or something.
Yeah, I grew up in Connecticut, right outside of Manhattan. And then after medical school, I actually lived and practiced in Brooklyn and in Greenwich, Connecticut before escaping to the West Coast here.
Where you studied naturopathic medicine, because they have excellent naturopathic med schools out there. Which one did you go to?
I went to the school in Portland, Oregon, to National College of Naturopathic Medicine. I graduated in 2001.
Great school. You know, yeah. That is it really has become a wonderful career path, because you get all the best of conventional training in chemistry and biochemistry, mm-hmm. and physiology, and then you get to really focus on natural approaches. And I really have tremendous respect for some of the naturopaths who are coming through this training process. It's really great.
Well, thanks. I feel fortunate. You know, it feels like a real privilege to be able to actually get integrative medical teaching in medical school, right? I mean, to actually get it all, you know, so
right.
As you're learning how to think clinically, you're actually learning how to think clinically from an integrative perspective, which I think is really useful. And the world has changed so much. And I graduated in 2001. Concepts like inflammation that we're going to talk about today, concepts like integrative medicine, these were things that we really weren't talking about all that much.
Well, imagine me in medical school. I had to be like the stealth holistic practitioner. I had to keep a low profile because, it was a little heretical to talk about these things, you know, beyond, you know, some basic things about diet. In those days, it was low-fat diet was in vogue. But start talking about vitamins, start talking about herbs, and, you get funny looks. So at least you had a nurturing environment for your interests. Okay, so let's focus on inflammation. So why is inflammation a big deal? You know, I touted it as a common pathway for a wide variety of diseases. What's up with that?
Yeah, well, what we've really discovered and what has become very mainstream for most people is the idea that this this chronic inflammation is at the root cause of all the chronic diseases that ail us, including, as you said, you know, heart disease, diabetes, and cancers, which, of course, are the top three things that kill us in this country. And so what does that mean? So what is chronic inflammation? So to me, when I think about it, it is the chronic elevation of inflammatory chemicals in the body. And why does that happen? I mean, what we've learned is that, you know, obviously an acute stressor that never gets resolved or multiple stressors happening without giving the body a chance to get back to baseline, all of those things can lead to those chemicals being elevated. But what we've also learned is that being overweight, having a diet that doesn't include the nutrients that we need, having a sedentary lifestyle, not sleeping well, excessive stress, all of these things also can elevate those very same chemicals. And so when you think about it that way, it's no wonder that this has really become endemic in our population, this chronic inflammation.
Well, you know, in conventional medicine, the answer to that is take an aspirin. You know, make sure you take an aspirin, because actually there's some studies that show that it may somewhat reduce your risk of colon cancer, heart disease. Mm-hmm. But there's so much more to reducing inflammation than taking a medication that unfortunately sends a lot of people to the emergency room with gastrointestinal bleeding.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, you know, so when I just rattled off that list of the diet and lifestyle factors that can chronically elevate inflammatory markers, I mean, that's a slice of bad news there. But the good news that goes with that is that we actually have a lot of power to change those dietary and lifestyle factors. So if we can be shown positive solutions and we can take the time to eat a whole foods anti-inflammatory diet, to maintain an optimal weight, to be active, to sleep well, to focus on and manage our stress and practice self-care, we can actually, you know, we can make a big impact in lowering those inflammatory chemicals in the body without causing gastrointestinal bleeding and other side effects, and actually give us a lot of benefits in the short term as well. Things like making us have better energy, better mood, sleep better, just, you know, I think optimize health overall while also decreasing our risk for chronic disease down the road. So it's actually a really big win-win.
Is there a benchmark mark that patients can use other than, you know, I feel better, I'm less achy, to determine whether they're approaching goal on reducing inflammation?
That's a really great question. You know, I think I know that I tend to look at C-reactive protein, cardio CRP, particularly as it relates to cardiovascular risk as an inflammatory factor. And certainly if you've got people who've got lots of aches and pains, you can look at just the regular C-reactive protein. You can look at sed rate and other markers of inflammation in the body. You know, for me, what I look at more and more as well is I look at omega-3 fats in the tissue and mm-hmm. look at fatty acid profiles, because I feel like you know, looking at making sure that people have an appropriate percentage of omega-3 in their tissue, you know, we know is crucial for balancing pro and anti-inflammatory chemicals in the body. And as far as I can tell, that's really one of the best ways I have to actually measure something at this point.
Well, my notes tell me that during this podcast, you're going to share with us a 5-point program. It's got to be, you know, 5-point program for reducing inflammation. So take it away. What does that entail?
So that would, and I've actually kind of already alluded to it, right? So number one, and I'm happy to talk about each of these separately, but it would be to eat a whole foods anti-inflammatory diet, to increase your activity level, number two. Number three, to get adequate sleep. Number four would be to include activities that actually calm down your stress response, right? I mean, we're so helpful as doctors when we say, oh, and lower your stress, you know, have less stress, as if it were somehow that simple. What I find is much more successful in my practice is to talk to people about activities and concrete solutions that they can use to actually help themselves manage the stress they have better. And then number five, I do think that there are certain anti-inflammatory supplements that can be really benefit this issue as well.
Okay, so let's dive down and look at, is there such a thing as a pro-inflammatory diet?
Yeah, I think most Americans are eating it.
Right, it's the standard American diet, right? It's a perfect example. So what about it is so inflammatory?
Well, you know, to me, one of the the things that has become much more clear since I graduated school in 2001, it was this really concrete connection between the way in which, particularly the sugars and the refined carbohydrates that we eat, impact inflammation, and how these two things really go hand in hand. When we're eating, and we take in so much sugar and so much refined carbohydrate, we eat a lot of processed foods, trans fats, things that are not only nutritionally depleted, but things like trans fats, which can actually really negatively impact our cell membranes and the way in which every system of our body works. All of these things kind of come together with alcohol and caffeine, what am I forgetting? Probably way too much conventionally raised feedlot meat create...
Pause on that, because there's some people who believe that meat per se is pro-inflammatory, so they believe that you should be on a vegan very plant-based diet. Is meat you qualify it. You say feedlot-fed meat as opposed to meat in general. Is there a distinction between feedlot-fed meat and grass-fed omega-rich meat?
To me, there is. And, so the bottom line is that meat is more inflammatory than vegetables. I don't know any way around that. Mm-hmm. And in my head, when I'm talking about inflammation, I'm constantly thinking about the ratio of omega-3s to omega-6s in the body.
Right.
Omega-3s, the long-chain EPA and DHA coming preformed from fish and algae, the omega-6s coming from vegetable oils, nuts and seeds, meat and dairy. As you can hear just by that list, we get so many more omega-6s than omega-3s. And we need omega-6s too, though, right? They're not totally bad. We need them as well for brain health and nervous system and heart and mood and everything else. The problem is we just get too much of them. So if you think about it from a ratio perspective and just from the sheer biochemistry of it, the omega-6s in meat are going to get transformed into more pro-inflammatory chemicals. Yes, meat is more inflammatory than vegetables. However, my understanding is that conventionally raised feedlot meat versus pastured meat has very different fatty acid profiles. You're going to get much more omega-3 in the pastured meat. They're also going to be more nutritious in general. But just having more omega-3 in the pastured meat is going to help you with that ratio. And I do think if you're going to be a meat eater, that is a much better choice, particularly for lots of reasons, but particularly in the context of this conversation.
So on the flip side, what are key anti-inflammatory foods that tamp down inflammation? Are there specific foods that are highly favored?
Yeah, well, I think that there are particular foods, and there, in my mind, there are particular ways of eating. So, obviously, having lots of fruits and vegetables is extremely important. Making sure that you have you eat adequate protein and that you eat it regularly throughout the day to keep your blood sugar stable, I think is really essential for tamping down inflammation as well. And making sure you get plenty of good quality fats, because again, when you're getting plenty of the monounsaturates from avocados, from olives and olive oil, medium-chain triglycerides from coconut, omega-3s from fish. These kinds of foods not only are helpful because they make anti-inflammatory chemicals in the body, help modulate inflammation, but again, back to that blood sugar idea, they also are helping to keep the blood sugar stable throughout the day, and that's going to help you manage stress, help your mood, help all around. To me, adequate hydration, getting plenty of water, this is anti-inflammatory and really important. The other thing, there are lots of wonderful spices out there that we can include in our diet, which will not only make our food taste better, but actually have anti-inflammatory properties, things like garlic, onions, ginger, turmeric, rosemary, all of these things can be really, really helpful as well. And then, of course, they're delicious too.
And might I suggest, one other way, and I'm sure you're very on top of this, that diet influences inflammation, is that we now believe that diet kind of sets the stage for correct balance in the intestinal tract. And we know that in many disorders, there's an imbalance in the intestinal tract, and the toxins from the intestinal tract permeate, go through the wall of the intestine and are systemic and, get to parts of the body, the brain, the joints, the heart. and that too is a mechanism by which inflammation can be worsened.
Absolutely. And, you know, I often talk to my patients about including fermented foods in their diet. And I think that's a wonderful thing to do. And people who, you know, will eat sauerkraut and kimchi and cultured vegetables. We have, you know, a plethora of fermented beverages available, which I happen to love. And, you know, you can get them made from coconut. You can get them made from kombucha. You need to watch your sugar content in all of those beverages. But you can get them with low or no sugar, and they're delicious. And I also really encourage people to learn how to ferment some of their own foods. I mean, even something as simple as making your own cabbage juice, fermenting your own cabbage juice. You know, then you get wild fermentation, right? And we take these probiotics, which have particular strains of bacteria, but there's something to be said for wild fermentation as well, because there's hundreds of strains of bacteria that we count on to keep our digestive systems and our immune systems up and running optimally. So, you know, the more of those good bacteria that are running around, the better.
And from the dietary standpoint, in your little summary about the five things that reduce inflammation, you talk about food intolerances as being a source of inflammation. I mean, I guess one man's meat is another man's poison, so to speak. They're different strokes for different folks when it comes to foods.
Yeah, exactly. I am not one of these folks that thinks that, you know, gluten, dairy, soy, these things are categorically terrible for every person on the planet. I mean, I think that to a certain extent we have to experience how all of these foods impact us. So we could be eating something that, you know, very unwittingly thinking it's nutritious for us, and in fact it's actually causing an immune response, which is going to enhance this whole inflammatory situation we're discussing. So I do often do an elimination and challenge diet with patients, which, you know, to me is basically pulling out some of those foods that people react the most often to for about 3 weeks. To me, the big five there are gluten, dairy, corn, soy, and eggs. And then, of course, having people reintroduce them back in one at a time, every 3 days or so, looking for symptoms. And, you know, this is just one of those things that I learned my first year of school, and, you know, do it all the time with people. I find, especially with complex, really challenging cases, and often something that simple can clear some of the chaos away and help you really focus on what's going on clinically and what really needs to be prioritized.
Well, that's great. Let's move on to number two, which is enhance your activity level. You know, they say that, coined a new phrase, sitting is the new smoking. So, you know, can it really be so deleterious to engage in sedentary lifestyle when it comes to inflammation?
Well, yeah, I mean, absolutely. For two reasons in my head, I mean, one is because, you know, the more sedentary we are, the less active we are. You know, for most of us, that means we're not going to be at an optimal weight. And even if we are lucky enough to have metabolisms where we don't put lots of extra weight on, we're certainly going to have extra visceral fatty tissue. And of course, visceral fatty tissue, we now know, is its own endocrine organ. It makes its own hormones, and it makes its own inflammatory chemicals. So, you know, in conjunction with eating a whole foods anti-inflammatory diet, you know, having an active lifestyle where we're moving our bodies is going to help us keep an optimal weight and help us minimize that visceral fat, which is not helping us in this story of inflammation here. Now, the other thing about exercise is that when you do it, it actually releases anti-inflammatory chemicals into the body. So it's a real win-win in that regard.
Moving on to number three, adequate sleep.
Get adequate sleep. So it's interesting. You know, I just started going through Arianna Huffington's newer book, Thrive. Have you read it?
No, I've heard of it, but did that just come out?
I don't know how new it is. It's new to me. It hasn't been around too long. But she, you know, in it, she's talking about how important sleep is. And it's like reading something again where, you know, in my clinical doctor head, I'm going, oh, yeah.
I think coming from her, that's a very important message, because people, you know, pride themselves on how many hours they can log in. They're very dynamic. They're, you know, executives and moguls like she is, media moguls. And yet she's calling for people to sleep more. That's great.
Well, she's calling for this third metric, right? She's talking about how, you know, power and wealth, you know, are two legs on this stool of success that we have, but and how that that stool will not sustain itself without this third metric, which for her is about, you know, wellness and wisdom and taking care of oneself. And she really goes back to looking at how we manage our stress, and she feels like sleep is a huge part of it and has gathered a lot of research to support that. And this is from her own experience as someone who had really done so well on those other two metrics of success for all intents and purposes, but actually found herself suffering greatly with her quality of life because she wasn't taking care of herself. So it was a patient turned me on to the book, and I really enjoyed the little bit that I've read so far. But, you know, when you go back and start to look at the impact of sleep, like, I always think my grandfather, he used to say, I'll sleep when I'm dead, you know? And it's right. Like, you know, sleep is this offhanded activity that, you know, we only do because there's nothing else to do. It's dark, right? But we do it for a reason. Our bodies need it. It's a really important time for our nervous system to settle down. We regrow cells. We recuperate. We rejuvenate. I mean, it's this incredibly important time. And, of course, our society and our culture doesn't prioritize it, tells us to go. You know, we stay up late. We're on our phone. We've got all that stimulation. You know, and there is data out there that says that people who don't sleep well are more prone to depression. People who don't sleep well are more prone to be overweight, really more prone to die of all-cause mortality. So I think that prioritizing sleep is essential in regards to the context of optimal health and modulating inflammation, for sure. So to me, a patient comes in and they might have a laundry list of things they want to work on, but if they're not sleeping, that always gets moved to the top of the list for me, because I feel like there's only so much I can do with somebody until I get them sleeping.
And it's kind of a two-way street on that, is that patients who suffer from inflammatory disorders, their sleep is interrupted. So it's kind of like, it's a chicken and egg kind of situation. So you've got to settle down both. And I find that when we get patients less inflamed, they sleep deeper. They are able to repair their bodies more. And then they get, right. Instead of a vicious cycle, they get into a helpful spiral.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. The victorious cycle.
Ah, yes, indeed. All right. So generally, we divide these podcasts into two parts, as our listeners are familiar with. In part two, we're going to focus on the remaining two aspects of your anti-inflammatory program, calming down your stress response, and we'll also focus on anti-inflammatory supplements. What supplements should be in your anti-inflammatory program? Our guest is Dr. Amay Shunney. And she is a naturopathic physician. She practices in Santa Cruz, California. Why don't you give our listeners a lead on your activities? You have a website?
I do. It's www.drshunney, drshunney.com. I have a Facebook page as well, Dr. M.A. Gould Shunney.
Okay. And in part two, we'll focus on calming your stress response and specific anti-inflammatory supplements. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.